Well, it's good to see everybody tonight. We want to talk about tonight that part of the Sermon on the Mount that deals with hypocrisy. Our word hypocrite, we borrow directly from the Greek. The Greek word is hupokrites. So you hear our word hypocrite, we just change the letters to English, our alphabet. The Greek word means an actor under an assumed character. Obviously, we would say to be a stage player or a dissembler if we use the worst idea of it, which is not how they used it. You remember they had, when you have the drama classes, you always have that mask that has the smile on it and the other that has the frown, and they're crossing one another. If you've ever been in acting, you've seen what I'm talking about. Well, that's what the Greeks did. They didn't portray the character as our modern actors do. I'm not saying they didn't get into it and with their voices, but they had a mask that symbolized it. They'd hold it in front of their face. So obviously the real person's behind the mask. All the people that were in the audiences watching in that ancient time were seeing the mask. So that's why the word is used. And you get the sense of why that means. It's pretending to be something that you're not. Your true identity is hid and you're assuming a false one. In a very religious society like Jesus was in with the Jews, then we can't imagine today if I prayed on a corner, people are going to think you're weird. They're not going to be thinking, you know, oh, look at that righteous man. But in a society full of Jews that were all supposedly supposed to be serving God, it'd be like thinking of church being everywhere. Then you can see why he is condemning what he is condemning. Notice he says in verse 1 that they are doing it to be seen of men. And the Greek word for scene there, by the way, is the Greek word for theater. Again, we get our English word comes almost directly from their word. And it meant to look closely at something. So what the hypocrite was doing was a theatrical performance. They were putting on a show, as we would say. And sometimes people do such in an ostentatious way. They're seeking the applause of man, probably where it comes more readily into our environment is that if I'm having to give a substantial amount of money and say that amount of money is coming to the congregation, it'd be really hard to be the person that says, I'm going to do that anonymously, that nobody's going to know. It's going to be zero reference to it. It'd be really hard not to. The other day, a friend of mine, and I don't think he was doing it with those motives, but he had 1 million downloads to his blog. Or whatever you call what those guys do. And he had to let us all know on Facebook. And I thought to myself, you don't realize you're going to be my sermon illustration. Not that I believe you're a hypocrite, but the idea is leave it alone. You know, so what if you had 1 million downloads? Guess what that looks like? It looks like, you know, look at me. Look how great I am. Let others blow those horns. Let others do those things. Because the danger is, and he's going to say that, by the way, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. And boy, there's the danger. From our own selves, we can do the wrong thing. So it has to do with motive, doesn't it? Secrecy. Did you notice how many times? There are 3 verses the word secret or secrecy is used, 2 times in every verse. So 6 times in the passage it was read to you. Now that should get our attention. Just like any time we're going through studying, if a phrase or a word is used over and over again, then obviously we need to focus on that. God wants us to do what we do without anybody knowing it. And that to ourselves we have to be very careful. None of us think we're hypocrites. Anybody raise your hand and say, you know, I've been guilty of that. I've been a hypocrite. Why does he have so many verses in the Sermon on the Mount about it? Why? Because we are, at times, exactly what he says. And he is bidding us beware of it. Because, folks, we can be lost because of it. And we need to hear. The Sermon on the Mount is such a great piece that we will study all of our lives. And you will feel like I am not a Christian every time I read it. Because of the challenges it poses to each and every one of us. So the first thing, as we think about Matthew 6 and verse 1, is he says you better avoid it. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Take heed. The word there means to be careful, to be on guard, literally to put the mind to something, therefore to pay attention to it because of how dangerous it might be. If I'm going down a road and I see a warning sign, A few years ago, I may have told you all, I'd always had the urge to drive a motorcycle. And one of the young preachers got a motorcycle where I was, and so it just gave me the impetus. I remember when I bought it, I had already bought it. I'd talked to Wilna about it, but it had been in veiled ways. And so I'm standing across a garage that's full of stuff, so she can't get to me very fast. And I tell her that I bought the motorcycle. And she had the reaction I thought she would have about it. She said, "What are you going to do when I have to pick you up off the side of the road or, you know, the rest of your life?" She said, "That young preacher is going to feed you through a straw, not me." And so we had quite a conversation that day. And as it turned out, that was not a good thing for a middle-aged man to be on a motorcycle. All right. So I came up to some signs. They were clearly there, big old yellow with those, you know, those caution arrows, you know, telling you that a curve is coming up and you better pay attention to this curve. And I was going about 40, I think. I wasn't going a super fast. Well, it might have been 50. But I came to that curve and we didn't make it. And I ended up, folks, you could have had a broken neck, paralyzed preacher from, and the young preacher would have been feeding me through a straw. Better pay attention to signs, right? And that's exactly what Jesus is doing here. He's throwing up huge yellow warning signs saying, you better listen, you better behave, because what's on the road before you is very, very dangerous. When Jesus says, look out for something, he means for us to understand it. Do you realize this? Jesus is the only person in the New Testament to use the word hypocrite. Now, you'll find hypocrisy a couple of times used by Paul in his writings, but the word hypocrite, to say the noun form of the word, 15 times in Matthew, 4 in Luke, and once in Mark, Jesus is the only person to use that word. That alone ought to get my attention. That alone ought to tell me that he means business by this. E. Stanley Jones says, you can call attention to yourself and religion with such emphasis that you succeed in announcing only your spiritual death. God hates pride, which is at the root of hypocrisy, because it wants to put itself forward, right? Proverbs 6 and verse 13, the fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride and arrogance, and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. Or 1 Timothy talks about the qualifications of elders, and a new convert is not to be put into, even though he might meet all the other qualifications. He must not be a recent convert, or he may be puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. How many passages can we read about the pride of our heart can deceive us, as Obadiah wrote to the Edomites in verses 3 and 4. Being aware of our good deeds and using them for carnal purposes. Again, he warns us about that. Verse 2, therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet. Before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. I surely say to you, they have their reward. And then at verse 5, when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogue and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. And surely I say to you, they have their reward. To be seen of men. What is it in us, this ravenous hunger, that other people see us and praise us for what we do? God cares greatly why we do a thing, not just that it is done. The good thing that can be done can be greatly wrong with him because of the why. Why did we do it? Again, Jesus many times warns us of that. In John 5 and verse 4, how can you believe when you receive glory from one another and do not seek the glory that comes from the only God? Or those men that were rulers of, and believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, it says, they would not confess Jesus' name. For they love the glory, or your version may say, praise that comes from man more than the glory or praise that comes from God. We are so prone to love the praise of men. It's not being seen of men that is condemned. There are some things we can't do without being seen by others. But it is doing it in order to be seen by men. That's what he is condemning in us. And so pride in the heart is sin's genius. It's not my phrase. Paul Earnhardt wrote that in his commentary that he did on the Sermon on the Mount. That's the genius of sin, pride, that is behind it. Because ultimately, loving men's praise is really loving ourselves. Martin Lloyd-Jones says, ultimately our only reason for pleasing men around us is that we may please ourselves. We can go to church for the wrong-headed reason, right? Maybe when we're younger, it's to please our parents. So we say, get off our back. But in some ways, we also want to be in their good graces and please them. We do it for the wrong reason. And it degrades our service to God. It's low and vile. Any of us understand that if we've done that at times, we know how bad that is. It's not wrong to love to pray. And there are men, just like we had a minute ago, that are going to pray in public. But again, the sin is that we may be seen. The reason we're doing it is we need to have the attitude that wherever I go, I go into my secret place, and there it's just between me and God. You men that pray publicly, do you have the same problem that I do when I pray publicly? Is I'm thinking about everybody out here. And if I could, do you remember that Kevin Costner movie, Love of the Game, where every time he portrayed a Billy, whatever his name was, but just this superstar pitcher that had a huge career. And every time that he would preach, he used the words, he'd say, clear the mechanism. And it would just be, I mean, everything would go silent. All the roar of the stadium would cease. And it would just be him and the batter and the catcher. And that's all that he focused on. That's all he heard. That's all he saw. You know, can you imagine if we could enter in, if we prayed publicly into that secret place? We're just between us and God. That's all there is. And we don't think about who's out there. We just close our eyes to pray, open them up, and oh, there you are. But we are praying to God. Our heart is open. Because that's what prayer is, isn't it? Prayer, by its very nature, requires an opening of the heart to God. In Psalms 139, he says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and see if there is any wicked thing in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Think of somebody then that's doing it, praying, supposed to open the heart to God. Think of that verse, and yet they're doing it to be seen of men. How could we dare profane such an act of prayer and thinking we're in the throne room of heaven to be seen by men? And ultimately, it's not just the love of self, because then it becomes our God. When Satan tempts us to hate, he's really assaulting the sixth commandment that we do not murder. Really the reason why somebody would murder someone. To lust, he assaults the seventh commandment, to not commit adultery, to not have any sexual sin. And Jesus would expound upon that, that if you looked on a woman to lust after in your heart, you've committed adultery already. He infects us with hypocritical pride. He assaults the first commandment. You shall have no other God before me. Because ultimately the hypocrite's ego for self, for that importance to put ourselves before others, that attitude elicits Jesus' most scathing rebukes. And we need to understand how dangerous it is for all of us. Knowing the hypocrite will not be rewarded by God. He says very clearly to us at verse 2 that they do their deeds to be seen of men, otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven. And then verse 5, the same thing he says again, that surely I say to you, they have their reward. If that's what they're seeking, they have their reward. The word have there, the Greek word, is a technical term of commercial transactions. It means to receive a sum in full and you get a receipt for it. No more is due. You've paid fully. And what he says is, you've got all you're going to get. If men is what you're seeking, then that's what you have. Because beyond that, God is going to judge us. The sad reality the Lord is saying to us is there's not going to be anything else until judgment day. And then you'll hear from Him. And then we'll really know who we are. If a subtle desire, as Jones wrote in Kenneth Chumley's commentary, if a subtle desire to be seen of men runs through your doing of religious things, then the deed dies with the moment. There is no lasting quality. You wanted the praise of men, you got it. That settles the account. There is no reward with your Heavenly Father. The true disciple, though, does it in secret. And there is that point I was making, that in three verses, twice in every verse, so six times, this idea of secrecy is mentioned. Again, our deeds sometimes have to be in public. A man leading in prayer can't be in his closet. but he can be in his closet, as it were, in his mind. He can go into that private place and pray, and only between him and God. It does mean that we don't look for ways to announce our good deeds to others. We must never keep account of our good deeds. I always think about that when I see plaques with the big donor's name. You know, I always think about the guys when I go down a list and it says anonymous. Anonymous. And sometimes it's the huge amounts of money that are given. That's what God is asking us to do. Not to do it in the eyes of others, but only for God to know. For God is the one that sees. Prayer is to be undertaken, as Leon Morris said, with a single eye on God, not with a side glance at people who could be impressed. And so in secret means, then here's the really hard one, even from ourselves. When you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Now, you ask yourself, how is that possible? How can I do something like giving alms to some poor person in needy, a cause, whatever, a charitable deed? How can I do that in a way that my left hand and right hand don't know what I'm doing? Well, it means we're not going to blow trumpets. We're not going to announce it to others. Okay, we understand. We said that. But how do I do that with myself? Because that's how subtle sin is. The moment that we give something like that to somebody, that moment we need to, I think immediately, okay, what else do I need to do? You're not thinking about what you just did. You're not congratulating yourselves. You're not thanking yourself for what a great Christian you are, what a great servant you are. I gave this huge amount of money. It cost me a lot. The moment it's given, you don't even look at it. You just go, what else do I need to do? Because you're not thinking about yourself. You're not thinking about it. You're looking always outward as God does. An act of mercy turned into an act of egotism and vanity. Think of how horrible that is in God's eyes. Paul Earnhardt said, "There is nothing which more poisons the stream of true goodness for others while we seek our own end in the very act of kindness." Kingdom people, it's a radical change of heart. It's saying I do something and I forget it the moment that I do it. The moment that I do it. I think about what else can I do? Where else can I help? And I'm not looking for any accolades from anyone. The only way to escape the pride and hypocrisy in our hearts is that Christ becomes everything to us. And that's what I guess I'm saying by saying, where else can I serve God? John Stott said, "We have to become so conscious of God that we cease to be self-conscious. And it is on that Jesus concentrates." And Paul Earnhardt wrote these words, and we end our lesson here. "A man is not humble because he thinks so little of himself, but because he does not think of himself at all. Pride dies only when self is forgotten, and we forget ourselves only in the face of a far greater loyalty and devotion. The old arrogant, vain self will have died when Christ so fills us that there is no longer any room for anything else. It is not I that lives, Galatians 2:20, but Christ who lives in me. And when we can say almost without thinking, Christ is all, what a blessed thought." Florida College for several years now has invited older preachers. One year I got to go hear Leon Goff present. They want to connect them with everybody else and think about all the things that they had done in their life. And so Brother Leon talked about all the huge things that he had lived through and gone through. The time preached in California, probably when you were out there in that day, Ross and Nancy. And it was just a thrill, because I've been close friends with him, to hear about his life. Well, when Paul Earnhardt's time came up, man, I remember the auditorium was packed with people. I got there as early as I possibly could to get as close as I could, because I didn't know. I knew Paul had gone to Nigeria. I knew he had worked 3 years of his life. Some of his kids one kid had been born over there. And I was just curious to hear about the parts of things. And Paul Earnhardt got up there and really disappointed me. He didn't tell one thing about his life. And when it got over, I'm thinking through the middle of it, you're not doing what I came here to hear. I wanted to hear about you. I wanted to hear about it. And then I thought to myself, when I read that statement today, that we may get to the point and say, Christ is all. That was Paul Earnhardt. That was him to a T. He was telling us that nothing about him mattered. He preached to us about Jesus. And nobody was mad about it. Well, a little bit mad, because I still wanted to hear about it, the servant's life. But that was Paul Earnhardt to a T. May it be us. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, tonight Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. If we can help you to return to him, if you walked away from him, all together we stand and sing.